The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning. Today's talk is about the three temperaments, and we'll describe what that is. As we observe the mind through meditation practice, it becomes clear that its operation includes the repetition of some familiar patterns. Yeah? Have you seen this maybe in your mind? So in Buddhist psychology, these patterns are acknowledged, and they're also grouped together in meaningful ways that help us become free of the conditioned patterns. Yeah? So I'd like to talk today about a framework of what are called three main temperaments of the mind. Now, as humans, we all have all three. So it's not like we're trying to figure out which one we only have. But we do tend to have one that's prominent. So this may be an interesting exercise for you as we go through to kind of look at that. Sometimes you'll hear these temperaments referred to as personality types, as kind of a translation into what we might say in Western psychology. I think this word is a little misleading. I prefer the word temperament. Personality type sounds a little too casual, and it also sounds kind of fun to our Western way of thinking, you know. You can take the test and figure out what your type is, and you can ask other people, hey, baby, what's your type? You know, that kind of thing. And that can be kind of fun, it's true. But the implication here is that these are actually kind of deep proclivities of the mind, and they're things that we can work with. So the personality types are meant to be indications of these kind of patterns in the substrate of our mind. And they can be used by a teacher in order to guide students. They know what their type is. They can challenge them in the right way and support them in the right way. But also, we can do that for ourselves if we understand our own minds. This is part of the process of understanding our own minds. This is a time of year, it being the last day of the year, when people are setting intentions. Maybe they're making resolutions, but here in the Buddhist world, we call that setting intentions. And so I will be explaining the suggested practice tasks for each type of personality or each type of temperament. And so you might want to consider your own temperament and how that could apply to your practice in the coming year. I'll also mention a few ways of relating to this that might not be so helpful, just so you're aware. The point of understanding your personality type is not so that you can fix it. You know, it's not bad and wrong and something to get rid of or something to, you know, eliminate in some way or to make it more Buddhist. I should have a more Buddhist personality. It's also not to glorify it. You know, oh, I'm this certain type and what's, you know, that's really great and so I should go out and do more of that. And it's also definitely not to be limited by it, you know, and to be caught in, this is my type, and so I'm doomed forever to have this kind of karma, and that's it, and to believe that this is some kind of deterministic fate. So just like we all have a body, we all have a mind with certain dispositions to it, and if we know about it, then we can account for it in our practice and use it, actually. I'll also be describing some of the advantages of each of these temperaments and the things, the beautiful qualities that they can turn into. So I'll put in one more caveat before getting into this, which is that it's important to be careful with the language a little bit. Although I may use this language for convenience, I want to be careful to point out that I'm not talking about people who are invariably a certain way. I may use the phrase, for example, a greed type does such and such, or so forth, which conjures kind of a fixed way of being. You know, this is a person who is X, And that's really not what the Buddha meant. I'll back that up with this quote from the Buddha. "Luminous, monks, is this mind, but it is defiled by adventitious defilements." So this means that the defilements are not intrinsic to the mind, necessarily. They come from time to time based on conditions. Now, it may be that there are conditions that happen pretty frequently for your mind that bring a certain type of behavior or pattern, but that doesn't mean that that's the way your mind is in kind of a fundamental sense, that you're that kind of person. No one can be an angry person every moment of every day. And so, you know, these are visiting or adventitious defilements. So the temperaments are describing three top-level patterns that can happen in a mind. And in some of the teachings, these are actually expanded into six, in the Vasuddhimagga, for example. And I've even heard of one that's 14, but I didn't even read what those are, so I'm not entirely sure. But in fact, you can kind of collapse them into three broad ones called greed, hatred, and delusion. And you may recognize these as the three poisons or the three roots of unwholesome behavior that are also described in other parts of the text. And again, these are the three proclivities, the challenges of a particular mind that they'll have to overcome in practice. And then in addition, each of these has advantages and strengths. You know, a mind that tends in a certain way, unwholesomely, can be tuned to tend in that way wholesomely. And that can be used as a helpful way to be in the world, and also can be used for practice that can bring liberation. So maybe you won't stop being a greed, hate, or delusion type, but you'll stop being limited by that. And you'll see through that tendency of the mind and be able to shine with the possibilities of such a mind. Okay, so the greed type. Nobody's going to get off good here. But no one gets off too bad either. So some characteristics of a greed type temperament are that, and you'll be able to see each of these, is that this is the temperament that likes nice things, likes beautiful things, likes harmony, wants things to be pretty and soft and comfortable, these kinds of things. Generally feels that more is better, and that things can always be improved and helped and shored up in some way. So often this type of temperament can be fun to be around, friendly, affectionate. Someone described it as the greed types know how to have a good party, you know. This tendency also looks first for the advantages and for the goodness of things or of people. And so this is a kind of a positive mentality in a certain way. One challenge is that this temperament will tend to discount real faults. So there are things that are wrong and there are things that aren't working or are unwholesome, and they'll just not see that because, you know, we want to focus on the positive here. And there's a tendency also maybe to feel insecure or worried about things going away or things not appearing, right? It's actually been shown in neurological research that greed and fear are very close to each other in the mind, in the way, you know, in the same brain centers are operating there. And it's not an accident, right? Greed or wanting things is very much related to the fear of losing them. That's the flip side, yeah. So you can see where this, you can kind of get the shape of this as I describe it. So there are certain challenges in practice for this temperament or the portion of your mind that has this quality. One is that such a mind may be flighty, always getting excited about the new thing, and then dropping it for the next thing, the next new, exciting, interesting thing. And so the result of this is that this person may not be able to settle on one practice or one teacher and actually stick with it and do it to get the benefits it's always the top level of this thing, and the excitement of each new thing. And if you dig 7 wells that are 7 feet deep, you won't find water. But if you dig 1 well that's 49 feet deep, you have a much better chance, right? So the challenge of the greed type also is that they don't like renunciation or relinquishment, which is a very important part of the path. Early in the practice, the person will not give up what's harmful. So a greed type may stick with behavior that is detrimental because they don't see the faults of it, they don't see the problem, they want to keep doing it, they like it. You know, addictive behavior can be related to greed, for example, not being willing to give up something that's clearly harmful. And then later, when, you know, when maybe you've given that up and become a serious practitioner, then the greed type doesn't give up what's beneficial. Because this practice eventually asks us even to give up, at the end, everything. And so there can be an attachment to, it's called the faith type eventually, you know, really devoted to the Dharma, which is a good thing, but really attached to going on retreats, seeing good teachers, having lots of Dharma friends, participating in the Sangha. All of this can be very good, but at some point even that has to be relinquished in order to find total freedom. So that's a later problem for the greed type. And then maybe most fundamentally, the greed type holds to sense pleasure and doesn't necessarily see the greater happiness that's available from practice. So this is a limited vision of happiness, basically. Greed types appear to be happy a lot of the time, or can be, but it's the happiness of things that are limited, and they may not be willing to look at a bigger vision of happiness. There's a teaching that says, one who is wise is always willing to give up a lesser happiness for a greater one. And the greed type has trouble with that first part of giving up the lesser happiness. You know, if it's happy, it's good, I want it. So the somewhat interestingly, it's said that the best practice environment for a greed type is one that's dark and dirty and ugly and, you know, generally evokes the unpleasant in order that they have to eventually see, oh yes, there are things that are unpleasant. I don't know if that's really true, but there's one teaching that says that. So the task for the greed type is to allow the pleasant to cease. Yeah, everything arises and ceases. Can we allow the pleasant to cease and to let in suffering? This practice does eventually turn us toward seeing things through the Four Noble Truths, which says this is suffering, this is the cause of it, this is the end, and this is the path. So that first noble truth, this is suffering, oh, this is what's happening right now, contains an element of suffering. Very important to be able to see that if we're going to be free. And that's hard for the greed type to turn towards that and say, oh yes, in this moment there is actually suffering happening. So, tasks. How to do that? Unfortunately, the practice isn't that fun for the greed type. There's a lot of reflection on death, reflection on non-beauty, reflection on unattractiveness, moderation in food, guarding the sense doors, so, you know, not indulging too much in the senses. And on a more pleasant note, association with wise friends is important. So associating with people who do have a sense of restraint and who are committed to a path of renunciation is very beneficial for a greed type who's not so sure about that. So if this picture doesn't look that pretty, don't worry. The long-term result of this, when this temperament is developed and cultivated into its good, the best aspect of it, and when the fruits of practice start to shine through a mind like this, the result is metta, actually, is loving kindness. And I think some of us may have been fortunate enough to meet teachers or wise beings who have this quality. There are people who just radiate loving kindness. You just feel loved in their presence. And this is very, very inspiring. It's a very beautiful thing to become a metta type, to be able to offer that as something that shines through, this love for everything, for every being, for the world with all its faults, because you've seen the faults and overcome them in certain ways. So this the greed type turns into a beautiful, beautiful metta type. So the hate type, hate and aversion, the characteristics of this tendency of mind, this proclivity of the mind, are to be angry, critical, frustrated, and cynical. Sound familiar? We may have this in our mind also, right? So at the kind of grosser level, the hate type condemns living beings. So angry at people, angry at the way all those annoying people are, frustrated by everybody who's standing in my way, you know, that. Condemning also what's called unreal faults. So that's usually condemning other people. So things that aren't really problems, they find problems with. but in addition, and this starts to tend towards the better side, or the good karma side of the hate type, is that they can condemn real faults. So it's called faults of formations, and that means it's true. The things of the world are unsatisfying. They are disappointing. Sense pleasure doesn't last. You can't really get everything to work and keep it that way. It's a problem with the world. That's why we have spiritual practice. And so the hate type has no problem seeing this. And they're willing to stand up and condemn that which isn't working, that which is unwholesome, that which doesn't conduce to happiness. The hate type does want happiness, just like the greed type, and they're frustrated that it isn't here. And so, of course, the challenge of this is that they may discount real benefits. You know, there are also helpful things, beneficial things, good things about the world, and the hate type doesn't see those. They're focused on what isn't working. They may be resistive. Another manifestation of this is that the aversion type is resistive to new ideas and often says no at first. So you know people like this. You come to them and their answer is no. I want to go to your boss. I want to try this new project. No, it's too hard. It's too difficult. It's not what we need, what we do. But you may learn that such people will eventually say yes if you keep working on them, or you come from a different angle, you know. So that sort of initial no, though, is very typical of the aversive type. Aversive type may have lots of opinions. They're very quick to judge. Now, the one advantage of this is that they may be an excellent supportive critic in your life. If you're working on a project, it's said that every entrepreneur should have a supportive critic, someone who's going to point out what's not going to work, what's possibly a problem, what's dangerous. Hate types also tend to be willing to really dive into the details of things and really check things out. You know, the greed types has a lofty ideal and sort of pursues something based on that, and the hate type actually does the numbers and says, you know what, I've worked this out and this business plan ain't going to fly. Right? And you need that. And now they may be wrong. They may be counting, you know, too cynical about things. But this balance, right? The two can balance each other pretty well. So, and that can lead later to the advantages of, you know, which I'll talk about, of the hate type. So there are challenges in practice, though, for the hate type also. One is the tendency to alienate other people with harsh speech or other ways of turning people off. And this is, you know, the challenge with this is it's harder to have good friends, right? Wise friendship is absolutely the foundation of spiritual progress. And if you're turning people off and not able to keep a good sangha of friends, that's a problem. Hate types may limit new experiences by not being open to trying new things. They can be hard to teach because they're resistive to the teacher in some ways. Don't want to try different alternatives. And the aversive type can hurt themselves through self-inflicted stress. So a lot of the kind of self-hatred that we have can be very, very limiting in practice. You know, we believe I'm no good at this. it's never going to work for me. They can get cynical about the path itself, and that can limit progress in certain ways. So there are certain limits. You know, they place limits on themselves. Interestingly, there's a place in the teachings where it says that the challenge of the aversive type, or more specifically, the person who's trying to eliminate experience, goes too far. It says that the greed type doesn't go far enough, and the hate type goes too far. And what that means is that they may actively try to push things away, you know, the things that are harmful. You know, it's nice to notice that they're harmful, but to actively then try to eliminate all of them, to eliminate everything I don't like, is unnecessary, because everything you don't like is going to cease anyway if you wait. And so that extra act of trying to get rid of it keeps one bound to samsara. So that's the challenge for the hate type. So the best practice environment is one that is beautiful and refined, with lots of servants and nice things and attendance and a nice, very calm, relaxed, peaceful, beautiful environment for the hate type. You might say, what? Why do they deserve that, these annoying people? Actually, it's so that they can see that anger and aversion is a mind state. If there is no cause for it in the environment, there's only one place it can be, right? And it can be really hard to see this if you're a hate type, because of course there are all those real faults out there that you're very good at condemning. But actually, it's a mind state. It's coming from your mind. And so you have to be in an environment where you can realize that that's the only possible source. So the teaching says. So the task is, don't feel threatened. Yeah? If that immediately sounds threatening to you, that's a clue. Don't feel threatened. Let in beauty. Can you actually be happy for a moment? And allow that in. Some people practice for years and years and finally realize that they've never really let in joy. You know, they've never really felt content with a moment. It's always been practice, practice, practice. And, you know, and they never sat down and said, this is so beautiful, I'm just happy right now. So let that in. How to do that? Metta practice is the best. There's a number of things you can do, but metta practice, loving kindness, practice wishing well, practice wishing to be happy for yourself, for other people, for everyone, wishing that all beings would be happy, even those annoying ones. This is tremendously nourishing for the heart of that's tending toward the hate type. Now, if your immediate reaction is, I don't want to do that, that's another clue. I do know someone who's a strong aversive type who said that when she first started practicing metta practice, she couldn't do it. She wanted to. She knew it would be good for her because she knew she had this tendency. But all she could feel was this tremendous contraction. It's like as soon as she tried. And so she had to do mindfulness practice of mindfulness of tension and contraction. And eventually that, you know, the mindfulness helped settle that out and she was able to do the metta practice. But it's interesting, right? Greed types, on the other hand, love metta practice, even though they don't need it as much. Everyone needs it, but, right? So you can see this. Now, this mind also has advantages. The long-term result of the aversive type mind, when it's been developed, cultivated through its merits, and really allowed to shine forth, and the Dharma can shine through it, is that this is a mind of wisdom. So the angry mind is very judgmental, but the wisdom mind is judicious and really sees this is wholesome, this is not wholesome, this is the path, this is not the path, this is a good way for you to practice, this is not a good way for you to practice. That kind of, you know, they can be excellent, excellent teachers. And that kind of wisdom is so helpful. It's what we need, those of us who are, you know, still in the dark. So this is can be extremely useful and valuable and beneficial for the world. Okay, the delusion type. So this tendency we all have also, and in fact, greed and hatred always come along with delusion. So it's there anyway, but there are some for whom it's the primary shine. It's the kind of the biggest issue. So characteristics of a delusion type tend to be spacey, not quite able to get things together. I've been amazed by encountering this actually a little bit more in the recently. I thought of this as an example. I've been giving things away online because we have some extra things at the retreat center, at IMC's retreat center in Scotts Valley. We have some extra things and we've been putting them on Craigslist and on Freecycle to give them away. And a significant fraction of people who respond to these posts on the internet, I find, it's challenging for them to actually connect with me, tell me their phone number, arrange a time when they will arrive to get this item, and actually arrive and get it. It's not that hard, you would think, but it is. It is hard for a lot of people. And, you know, they don't respond to the email, or they finally call back, but they didn't, you know, and then they say, okay, I think I can be there at 2, and I say, great. And then at 1:52, I get a text on my phone that says, oh, having difficulty, can't get there, too busy today. You know, it's like, okay, and I understand that one, like you know, once or something, but I've learned it's like 50% of people. I had no idea, in a sense. And so I think, and then I feel compassion. You know, this is the mind that people are living with. They're unable to get their day together and kind of do this. So it's like, yeah, okay. Delusion type doesn't notice details right away. It takes a while to really absorb the physical features of a place or the qualities of another person. I remember I was sitting around a lunch table with a bunch of people and we were talking about remodeling somebody's kitchen. And someone said, well, what color is the paint in your kitchen? And the person had lived there for 10 years, but she didn't know what color the paint in her kitchen was. And I can understand that, you know, you may not know the exact number of what, you know, the Kelly Moore paint that it is. But she actually couldn't quite remember if it was pink or peach or brown, you know, sort of a brownish. It was sort of in that hue tone, but she never really looked. So, and I've seen that in myself. I know people, I've known people for a long time, and if you ask me the color of their eyes, I might not know. And I think, that's interesting. How could I have not noticed that? So, delusion is also the tendency not to understand nuance. So a sort of a social tendency to be a social clod in certain ways. And this can be overt or it can be more subtle. You know, we missed something we realize later, or we missed something that was going on. A delusion type may not have a clear purpose or goal or intention. There can be a tendency to drift along, see, kind of... And one version of this is said to be restlessness due to perplexity. So there's a sense of not really knowing what's best or not good or good, and kind of just because of that being sort of here and then sort of there and wandering in a certain way. Another version is restlessness due to speculative thinking. So there can be a sense that the delusion type is dumb, and it can manifest that way as someone who's a little slow. But lest you start thinking superiorly, oh, that's not me, I'm very smart. Actually, a lot of scientists are delusion types, just so you know. People may be very intelligent, but wrapped up in their own view of things, caught in a particular view or speculative way of seeing the world that's not actually true if they looked at it more carefully with some mindfulness. But that viewpoint has grown into their mind, and so they see things through a certain speculative lens. And this is actually a big problem, generally, to see things through our lenses, and that's a quality of delusion. And it infects also greed and aversion, where we have a lens of wanting to see things a certain way. There's an underlying delusion there. The delusion type doesn't tend to have as strong opinions. They're said to feel the equanimity of unknowing. It's kind of an odd phrase, but this makes them amiable as a friend, great travel companion, because the delusion type doesn't really care which hotel room they get. But the greed or aversion type is very clear that they want the corner room with the view of the lake, you know, that kind of thing. And the delusion, okay, you know, whatever. The delusion type doesn't mind as much. They don't care if they get the top or the bottom bunk, but somebody else might have a very clear opinion about that. So, good travel companions. Challenges in practice, however, for the delusion type are that they may not understand their mind very well. Yeah, so it's hard to describe experience to a meditation teacher, for example. And then there's doubt. Self-doubt is particularly a problem for the delusion type. Joseph Goldstein says that doubt masquerades as wisdom, making it hard to see. And so, you know, very erudite-sounding voices may say, well, of course you can't practice very well because of X, Y, Z, and it all sounds very believable, and the delusion type kind of buys into that more easily. And then there's fear. So because delusion types can sometimes start to get the clue that they're not really understanding what's going on, and so then they can be a little bit afraid. Oh, I'm not getting it. Or they've also been condemned by people who are quicker. You know, early they were conditioned because early in life, people who saw things more easily said, "You're so stupid. You're not getting it." Or "Stop. You're just messing it up. Don't even try. Please, it'd be better if I did it." That's the aversion type. Give me that. I'll do it. I can do it better. And so delusion types get conditioned that they're incompetent and not able to do things. They've been scolded for doing things wrong. Another challenge in practice is that the delusion type can go in the wrong direction for a while and not know it, right? And it takes a while to figure that out, so it can be slow. Best practice environment for a delusion type is said to be one that's very safe, one that's going to allow them to begin to trust their own experience and start to really see that, yes, I too can walk the path, and yes, with enough time, I can distinguish wholesome from unwholesome, start to gain a little confidence in that. So that's the task for the delusion type, is to trust one's own experience. Trust that the Dharma can come through, even this mind. The muddy water will clear, and to trust that. So how to do that is to cultivate wise attention. A lot of delusion comes from not paying attention carefully enough, properly, precisely. So adding a little energy to that precision of noticing can be very helpful. Talking frequently with teachers, studying the teachings, diligence. Delusion types can be spacey, wander off, not quite follow through. So having a little extra energy toward, okay, this is important for me to be diligent about this and to actually complete the task and notice what's going on. And then for the kind of development of the heart, taking refuge can be really helpful for the delusion type, is to remember, yes, that's right, there are things to rely on, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. What does that mean? Can I genuinely take refuge? So the long-term result of this tendency of the mind is that it can develop into beautiful, beautiful equanimity. And that's because the delusion type has to work so hard and spend so much time really looking at things carefully and really noticing, oh, there's praise and there's blame, there's pleasure and there's pain, there's fame and there's disrepute, you know, there's all kinds of the eight worldly winds that come through. They have to have tremendous mindfulness around these natural variations. And so this develops into this ability to just be with anything. And this is a huge gift in a world that's so caught up in the drama of this, up and down, rising and falling, passion for this, angry for that, desire for this. The world is awash in flames of this and that. And the delusion type provides that cool calmness, equanimity that says, it's okay. It's okay. We can sit through this. And it's going to be fine by itself if we just wait. So my guess is that you can see all of these tendencies in your own mind, greed, hatred, and delusion. Probably there was a bit of recognition in each of those. But it is helpful to know kind of which way your mind goes. So if you want an exercise, you can check on the way home. What do you notice? You drive home, you notice the billboards. Oh, I want that. I want that. Or do you notice how obnoxious all the other people are? Or are you not really noticing? You know, do you notice that you haven't noticed for a while? That's a very broad brush, right? But start to notice how you notice things and just see. Because you can actually be surprised. I know a teacher who assumed for a long time that she was a greed type. You know, that was just kind of because she knew she wanted things. And so she just kind of made that top level assumption. And after she even became a teacher, and you know, for a long, long time of practice, she finally realized that she was an aversive type. And all that wanting was covering up the fact that she was really, really dissatisfied and didn't like much of what she saw. So it's worth it to get down. Now, of course, different roots show themselves at different times. But we do probably have a root that's the strongest under there. And it's worth it to figure it out. Now, remember that these are only visitors. They're not worth identifying with. I am this kind of person. No, it's my mind has this tendency is a maybe a more helpful approach. And definitely we don't want to add to the fire by adding greed, hatred, and delusion onto these tendencies. Do you hate the delusion in your mind? Do you want the judgments that you keep? You know, these are extra. So as always, it's mindfulness. Seeing, this is what's happening. Hatred is happening. Greed is happening. I'm not really sure what's happening, you know, but having that mindfulness, this is what tendency is showing itself right now. This is what root is coming forth right now from my mind. Seeing that and being with it, allowing, and it will end. Knowing that it will end also. So maybe you've noticed some patterns that you'd like to be more mindful of in this coming year. Remember the tasks for each type. This is something that we could set ourselves to. You know, I'm going to spend some time developing the tasks that are helpful for these underlying tendencies that I see prominent in my mind, undertaking the suggested remedies that were offered in each case. And so that maybe in the coming year we'll see some blossoming of the beautiful tendencies, the metta, the wisdom, the equanimity that this world so much needs. We need people who are offering these beautiful qualities, who are shining forth with these aspects of the Dharma that come through the minds that have certain shapes to them. Love that strange shape of your mind and let the Dharma express itself through that in ways that are beneficial and helpful for yourself and for all beings. So may your practice flower fully in 2014. Thank you.